Then I call upon Dr. Sena da Silva, who is currently the Director General of NACA and Honorary Professor, Deakin University, Victoria, Australia. He has more than 35 years of experience in areas related to aquaculture development and inland fisheries management. He has worked in academia in many parts of the globe for over 30 years prior to taking up the current position at NACA in 2006, when he moved from his position as Professor of Aquatic Science at Deakin University. De Silva have coordinated delivery of the first ever postgraduate course in aquaculture in a distant mode at Deakin University. He's a leading researcher with more than 250 publications in peer-reviewed journals, author of advanced texts, and has also served on the editorial board of many journals and is currently the editor-in-chief of the newly launched journal Reviews in Aquaculture. Professor De Silva has been the recipient of many international awards for his work. So, Professor De Silva, the floor is yours.
Thank you, sir. Sadiqab, good morning again to everybody. I'm supposed to talk on aquaculture in Asia-Pacific region, past, present, and future. Before I go any further, I wish to thank my colleagues in NACA who helped me put this synthesis and the PowerPoint together, in particular Dr. C.V. Mohan and Thu Nguyen. Thank you very much. The area I have to cover is essentially about 30% of the of the habitable land area on our planet. But more importantly, that 30% of the land area is the home to 2/3 of the population of the globe. Even more importantly, it is the area which produces 90% of the aquaculture produce of the globe. Mr. Chairman, I have a dilemma. To give this audience, learned audience, something on the on that 90% of production that occurs globally, I have 30 minutes. And the rest of the 10%, I have 180 minutes. I bear no grudges. I am not envious. What I ask you, sir, is if I exceed my time by a few minutes, certainly not half an hour, please bear with me. Why are we gathered here? Farming of the waters. It's a significant food production sector, provide many millions of livelihood opportunities, contributes to food security and so forth, has a very long history. We heard in the morning that it is thought to have originated in China. Fan Li was the first to write about. But I tell you now, there is evidence emerging of the possibility that aquaculture originated in the most unlikely place of Southwest Victoria, the Aboriginal people of Victoria. Of course, the final judgment will come from anthropologists and historians. It is not for us to decide here what it is, but this is a bit of information. We are here to take stock of the last decade, evaluate how the sector could sustain in the next decade, ascertain how the sector could contribute to the Millennium Development Goals. These are the Millennium Development Goals that our leaders put together, and by 2015, we are expected to achieve almost all of these. But as Professor Swaminathan pointed out, we are far behind the clock in this regard. So we will have to work together and strive together to attain these Millennium Development Goals. The task ahead of me right now is to impress upon you the importance of aquaculture in the Asia-Pacific region, its form and function, its long-term sustainability, its contribution to food fish production, nutrition of the rural poor, rural livelihoods, income generation, and food security. Let me deal a bit with the consumption trends. fish consumption, as we heard from the last speaker, Ben, has been on the rise even on the African continent. Asia-Pacific accounts for nearly 70% of the global food fish consumption, averages about 43 kilograms. Global average is 22. This graph shows you the consumption pattern, freshwater fish in the Asia-Pacific and globally, and the line shows you that the Asia-Pacific eats almost twice that of the rest of the world, right, the proportion. Of course, in the region, as we know, unlike elsewhere, we eat fish in various forms, fresh, dried, whatnot. Future food needs. Region's population by 2050 is expected to reach nearly 6.3 billion. That is the current global population level. Of course, it is thought that the Asia-Pacific population would decline as the fertility rates are declining and the birth rates in the region are declining. What is important from our point of view is even if we maintain the present consumption, the region will need nearly 30 million metric tons of fish to maintain that level of consumption. And that's what this graph shows you, consumption and the needs and so forth by year 2050. Asia-Pacific dominated aquaculture globally. As I said right at the start, over 90% of the production. And the small table gives you 10-year periods of the share of the AP or the Asia-Pacific region in global aquaculture production, hovering around 80 to 90%. It's a lot. Of course, PR China is the mainstay in the region. Without PR China or People's Republic of China, region's contribution would come down to about 30% to the global production. The graph shows you world, Asia-Pacific, and China separately in green color, and the proportion of Asia-Pacific with China is 90%. It has been almost constant. Value of produce is almost a mirror image of the production trend. Overall, accounts for about 80% of value of global aquaculture. China is again the main contributor. Rest accounts for about 30%. The dominance of China is shown in this graph, both in value production and value in the Asia-Pacific region and Asia-Pacific region. The total and the percentage of China's contribution is shown here in production. In value, it's almost the same. So China is an important player, not only in aquaculture, we know almost everything in life today. Contribution in 2008. These are the main contributors to aquaculture production in the region country-wise and value-wise. Put in a different form. India is the second biggest producer and so forth, it goes on. Commodities. Finfish is the dominant commodity in aquaculture production in the region. Crustaceans least, but second ranked in value. Aquatic plants second ranked in volume, but least in value. These graphs show the trends over the years. Crustacean volume production is about 7%. But valued at about 24%. Finfish volume 49%, valued at about 55%. Aquatic plants volume is about 22% of the Asia-Pacific production, valued at about 8%. And the two pie graphs give you the same thing. Unit price, I think Ben mentioned this. Almost all commodities in the Asia-Pacific region, unit prices comparable. Significant difference between crustacean and others exist. The important thing is the farm gate price has declined or remained static over the years. the graph shows you, the upper graph shows you the trends in commodity prices in the world. Different commodities, meat, wheat, rice, oil, and so forth. You can see it going up to the moon. But unfortunately, the farm gate price of aquaculture product hasn't seen any of that trend in existence, apart from maybe crustaceans. Relation to environment, predominantly finfish, and in the region, the most important production is freshwater finfish. Marine finfish still is a small production proportion. Cultured species, top 10 globally in the region. Amongst the cultured species globally, of the top 10, 9 are tropical species. Only 1 temperate ranks amongst the top 10. And 7 cypriots out of the top 10, they feed low in the food chain. That's the important thing. And they produce the most. They contribute nearly 75% to the production in the Asia-Pacific region and 65% to the global fish production. I repeat, those are fish which feed low in the food chain, which is important. This is a bit of jugglery I have done to show you the 10 most important countries in aquaculture production volume-wise from 1980. Of course, I cut the globe into half as it's all surrounding here. 1990, you go, it is all here. 2000, it's all here. 2010, Chile starts appearing, the only exception. So the dominance of Asia-Pacific aquaculture is globally, is most evident from here. Over the years, from 80 onwards, and I imagine, and I expect it to remain like that for decades to come. I'm rushing through these statistics, which you can get from FAO. And I want to stress more on other factors of what I call lesser known entities. And the first one I choose is farm size. Asian Pacific aquaculture is small scale, farmer owned or leased, managed and operated. I will run through a few examples for you. Indonesia, freshwater ponds is only 0.14 hectares, right? And what you also see is, but with this, there is an increase in production over the years, even in that small scale farming activity. Thailand, coastal ponds, 0.8 hectare. Freshwater ponds, 2.28 hectare. And it goes on. This is Vietnam catfish farming. 55% of Vietnam catfish farms are under 4 hectares in size. But production per hectare is phenomenal. 350 to 400 tons per year per crop. Please don't go away with the idea that you can reproduce this in your country. Vietnam is unusual. I don't think anybody will be able to reproduce those levels of production. But this is the highest primary production per unit area of unit area that you get on Earth. And Vietnam has ever achieved it. So the important thing is that achievement is again through small-scale farming systems. What's the take-home message? So great bulk are small, farmer-owned, managed, and operated. No difference, my point is that it's no difference to the rest of the primary production sector in the Asia-Pacific region. Example, China is the biggest producer of rice. It produced 182 million tons of rice in 2006. 29% of global production, but the average farm size was 0.93 hectares. Dairy, Professor Swaminathan mentioned this. This is my favorite point too, Professor Swaminathan. India is the biggest global producer, but if you ask somebody generally, you would think Australia or New Zealand. That's a myth. The important thing is this dairy production in India is carried out by 210 million cows and buffaloes spread over 70 million families. That is three women or three people in the household produce, owns cow and produce that. Right? And my point is this is possibly something cultural. Maybe we don't have enough land, we have too much of population. This is the trend, and I believe that aquaculture will be no exception in 20 years to come. So sometimes big banks might come and say, we want to have industrial scale, this small scale doesn't work. But all the evidence show that all our staples are produced 90% by the small scale. And why should it change if they produce that way? So that's the take-home message I want to give you. Notable developments in the region. Farm shrimp accounts for 70% of the shrimp sold on the global market. Average annual growth in crustaceans was very high, and I give you figures. The predominant production takes place in Asia-Pacific. Early it was Peneus monodon. Major disease outbreak occurred in 1980 and beyond. And of course, the region needed strategies to overcome these disease outbreaks. Then there was this controversial shift to Litopeneus waname, or the white-legged shrimp from South American waters or Pacific waters. In some nations, they adopted it. Thailand is a very good example. It paid off. Production increased. Livelihoods were safeguarded. Income generation continued. What's the lesson learned? The lesson learned is the resilience of the small-scale farmer enabled this adaptation and production to continue. Nothing else. So the question now remains, is the sector going to be sustained in the long term or continue with waname? There are farmers' determination in some countries to continue with waname. In some countries, even though the country decided to have introduced waname, farmers continue with monodon. That is being improved now to better management practices, a cluster approach, etc., which in our view perhaps is the best approach to attaining sustainability, develop markets, and attain food safety and quality. Adoption of BMPs, marketability is enhanced, food quality standards are met. The final story of waname against monodon waname story is not over. In all possibility, both will continue to exist, thrive in the Asia Pacific. However, I want to show this: there is undergrowth, there is surge of monodon coming in. So the story is still not complete. We might see changes, but the important thing I stress is whatever the changes may be, is the resilience of the small-scale farmer that will be able to sustain and face that change. Striped catfish in Vietnam, one of the greatest success stories in aquaculture to date, possibly the fastest growth in any sector globally ever. Total area of farming is only about 7,000 to 8,000 hectares. It gives you now nearly 1 million tons of fish. And put it in perspective, the production of catfish in the Mekong Delta in these 7,000 hectares is about 70% of the total European production of all fish put together. This sector employs about 200,000 people, bulk of which are women. Perhaps most importantly, the highest production per unit area for any primary production sector on this globe. The sector has had to combat successfully major marketing obstacles by bigger countries. Example, the U.S. embargo on Vietnam catfish to import to USA. Put it in perspective, which I said, that about 60, it is equivalent to about 67% of the European production. Rohu culture in Myanmar. Labia rohita widely cultured in Myanmar. We hear mostly on Myanmar the political issues, not the aquaculture issues. I like to bring this out to you all. Myanmar has developed a very niche export market for its rohu. Within a 5 to 6 year lifespan, it has attained over $90 million in exports of rohu. It has triggered production, employment. The processing sector employs over 100,000 people. Niche market for the commodities that were considered unexportable. We always thought it is only shrimp that could be exported. There are enough niches in this world for these commodities to develop and grasp the opportunities. So all this gives you production and so forth. In the final publication, all these graphs will be available. Development and adoption of BMPs. One of the major concepts that NACA wishes to follow, develop, and nurture in the years to come, hopefully, even when I am not the DG. BMPs were initially developed as a consequence to solve disease problems in shrimp farming in India. First step was the development of the International Principles for Responsible Shrimp Farming. A consortium approach was adopted, funded by World Bank, etc., and it won the World Bank Green Award in 2006. This is now translated into about 18 languages and been improved all the time. Carried further now into shrimp farming, into catfish farming, and so forth. I might repeat, BMPs ensure sustainability and higher production, increase competitiveness of small-scale producers, ensure food quality and safety, facilitate market accessibility to small-scale farmers, facilitate environmental integrity, increase harmony among farmers, bring more social interaction, generate synergies, because BMPs are functional when they are adopted as a cluster, as a group. So no farmer acts in unison. Sorry, farmers don't act individually. All farmers in an area act in unison. So that is sharing some common property resources like the water and so forth. Because in a system, if you have one farmer not obeying the BMPs, he uses all the antibiotics, the rest of the 99 farmers are affected. So the important thing is BMPs individually is invalid. You have to have all the groups of farmers sharing a common resource, working together and adopting the BMPs. Cluster approach and BMPs, you might see these slides or things later on. I will rush through. Shrimp farming in India, there were significant results. There were policy and governance changes. This was NACA with MPDA, Marine Products Export Development Authority of India, combined together and developed the BMPs and the cluster approach initially. It went from strength to strength. Farmers adapted for shrimp ponds that were abandoned were rehabilitated under this system. Food security was gained, employment was gained, and the government of India finally decided to bring a major policy change by establishing an institution called the National Center for Sustainable Aquaculture, NACSA. As you all know, if I might say, Professor Swaminathan, it's not easy to bring policy changes in India. And this is, to me, one of the most successful stories in aquaculture. Now the Bible is being spread by this group. In my view, there are lots of needs to prepare the small-scale farmer to meet modern-day demands. increasing new web-based information by the farming community, bringing rural farmers to use modern ICT, advice, obtain advice on a day-to-day basis, market information, coordinating cluster activities, harvesting, and so forth. Here are some of NACA's efforts in bringing small-scale farmers, rural farmers, accustomed to using these techniques, and they continue to use these tools to improve improve marketability, coordinate activities amongst themselves. This upper graph shows you the NACA website, the number of unique visitors and downloads. I'm very proud to say NACA website is the most sought-after website on aquaculture in the world. We have 15,000 to 16,000 visitors per month, over 10,000 downloads per month. And we continue to use and improve this to bring information to small-scale farmers. Issues relating to biodiversity. We all are aware, and we should be aware, that all development should minimize impacts on biodiversity. Aquaculture, it is alleged too much dependence on alien species. Is this fact or fiction? It is a fact in the region. Alien species a major role in aquaculture production in Asia Pacific. Fiction, probably no explicit evidence from the Asia Pacific region to show that what we have done to this date has impacted negatively on biodiversity. I repeat, there is no explicit scientific evidence. The fact is, yes, production is fairly dependent on alien species. These are the two graphs which shows production without China and with China, and the percentage dependence on alien species. Example of market forces, the other major challenge facing the sector. This diagram gives you what I have worked out or what we have worked out at NACA, the profit margins that each one makes. The important thing is, when you look at the whole profit margins, this is the distribution, a very triangular distribution, with the farmer making the least amount of profit and these guys in the middle making the most amount of profit. These things are going to affect. The guys here do not realize that this is going to put many farmers and sectors at stake. Their economic viability is going to be affected. Already there is evidence. This I took from a very recent magazine from Vietnam. I will read it because it's important. In the first 5 months of 2010, the gross output was 248,834 tons with a value of US$533 million, respectively, increasing 19.5% and 11.6% in comparison with the same period of 2009. The increasing value is not equal to the increasing output due to the decrease in average fish price from $2.28 per kilogram in 2009 to $2.13 per kilogram in 2009. So the poor farmer is working at the margin, at the brink of his economic viability. But these guys should realize he goes bust, they go bust too, right? They won't have product to sell. There is 1 million ton of catfish. Catfish is just an example, which is marketed globally, processed form about 350 million tons of this thing. I thought I made my point for more time. Let's see. In this juggernaut of marketing, there are a number of stakeholders. There are the producers, there are the wholesalers, there are the processors, there is the market, and the consumer. Influence on trade and standard setting, however, is other way around. The producer has the least say. He produces most, but he has the least say. And we need to bring this dialogue, market cooperation and mutual benefits into the array. Otherwise, in 5 to 10 years' time, things are going to be different. We have to restore the balance. Okay. Then there is unfounded negative publicity to discredit the product. Who is doing this? We don't know. Probably competitive producers who are losing market for striped catfish. I'm again saying striped catfish is just an example. Are any of these of the above valid? In my view, definitely not. These are some of the negative publicity that is on the web all the time. Climate change impacts. I'll be very brief because there'll be a special session or whatever later on. Asia-Pacific aquaculture is spread from 43 degrees south to 43 degrees north. Major activities occur between the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of whatever. Then major impacts will be in deltaic areas, which are the hubs of activities. Mekong Delta, the Ganges, Brahmaputra, sea level rises, reduced water flows, tidal wave surges, extreme climate change, and so forth. So we need to develop suitable strategies. This is the intensity of catfish farming for those who haven't seen on the either side of the Mekong. This is the intensity of cage farming in China. Then there is a problem of counteracting erroneous public perceptions. Aquaculture is in the forefront in the past 3 decades. An era of communication technology, increased public awareness and aspirations. Therefore, it is subjected to more policing. Public perceptions impact on policy. Therefore, it impacts on development. With regard to aquaculture, many erroneous public perceptions. We need to counteract these. Positives have to be highlighted. Profile of aquaculture has to be enhanced. How do we do it? Way forward. Improve public perception on aquaculture and conductive policy developments. Increase the profile of aquaculture as a food source, income generator, contributor to food security, as an effective secondary user of water, minimal environmental perturbations, publicize positive impacts, publicize certain positive impacts on biodiversity. How do we develop? Maybe write success stories, but not many people read our books. Increase in production, profitability, and economic viability. Encourage development and adoption of science-based BMPs associated with the cluster approach, as I said. I won't go into the BMPs again. These are some of the BMP developments which are taking. BMPs cannot be developed in front of a computer. It has to be done with proper engagement and risk analysis, engagement with farmers, and BMPs have to be pragmatic. Standards don't have to be pragmatic. They can be developed from a in front of a computer. Furthering communication and small-scale farm education, as I mentioned, it is narrow profitability. Often small-scale farmers are induced to use untested, unproven efficacies of probiotics, therapeutics, and feed additives, comparable to what is recommended for humans. I recommend this, you read this book, Bad Science, which deals with all the pills that is recommended for human health nutrition, right? And you will see how foolishly we are spending our money. And there are groups which try to flog technologies, relevant or not, needed or not, proven or not. evidence that farmers could save up to 20% of recurrent expenditure if they, you know, if they do not indulge in these. So there should be interaction between farmer groups internally and externally. New developments, I will rush through, I'm sorry, culture-based fisheries. Asia-Pacific region has 66 million hectares of small non-perennial waters. Only less than 5% is used for fish production. Culture-based fisheries is essentially a user of a secondary, is a secondary user of water, non-consumptive. The seed stock is the only external input. It's environmentally non-degradable because you don't feed the fish. Fish feed on what is produced naturally. Very little capital inputs. It is very attractive to governments. CBF increases income, food, fish, and also communal harmony. It is estimated that potential production can be increased by 8 to 10 million tons of fish by 2015 if certain countries adopt. I am happy to say certain countries are adopting this now very effectively. Use of large static water bodies. Large resource in Asia, some very ancient, some very new, reservoirs. We have fewer lakes but more reservoirs. China has 86,000 reservoirs since 1948. We, as fisheries scientists, we are not engaged in the pros and cons of damming, but we are engaged in the fact that once it is dammed, let us use the water effectively for human nutrition, food fish production. Say some intensive cage culture is now, it is seen as a mechanism for providing livelihoods for displaced persons. The cage culture potential in Asia is very huge. This is in Indonesia. Again, we have to be careful how this development is taken aboard. Improvements to rice fish culture. Asia-Pacific region produces has 137 million hectares of rice paddies, 90% of the world area of rice paddy cultivation. PR China, rice fish traditional. New improvements, production methods, what you culture has brought increased farming. High possibility of adoption through the region and increasing production. Expansion of mariculture similarly. Application of technologies is needed. Genetic improvement in major cultured commodities, science-based food stock management, molecular screening for diseases, and so forth. Adopting SPF technology. I am not talking of very high-tech SPF or recirculating systems. In the region, you find simple open-air recirculation systems which are low-cost and can be managed. It is very much in use, for example, in Thailand. Two more slides. Contributing to conserving stocks and providing food sources. I'm taking this very controversial case of tuna, southern bluefin tuna. Is it true, exaggerated, over-dramatized, effective? This is the WWF advertisement in the Time magazine. Each advertisement in one particular region costs about $150 to $2,000 per week. So if globally, it would cost $1 million. The reality is, I'm not going to say whether about the real status. That graph shows you the different stocks of bluefin tuna. Whether this was effective, I don't believe so, because this advertisement was carried just before the last CITES meeting, and the CITES did not agree to ban southern bluefin tuna. The same magazine selects every year the 50 best scientific discoveries, which has a global impact scientifically, socially, and economically. For 2009, the second-ranked innovation was tank-bred tuna, a regional innovation in Australia. This is what the magazine carried. Now I ask you the question, what is the best course of action? To me, marry the two. Spend that money on the research. Increase research and development effort. Conserve the stocks. Continue food production through aquaculture in the Asia Pacific and globally. Many years of sashimi on the table will be available then. And the tuna in the sea will thrive. Just marry the two without dramatizing, without sensationalizing. 2,554 years ago, to be exact, Lord Buddha said, the greatest disease of all is hunger. Finding a day's protein needs may not be easy for 1 billion people. This is where our effort should come. Thank you very much, and sorry for this.